We have a special premium for first-time donors to Issues Etc. It's the new Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mousepad. We'll send it to you for your first-time donation to Issues Etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make your first-time gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
All those delegates in favor say aye. All those delegates opposed say no. In the opinion of the... Let me do that again. All of those delegates in favor say aye. All those delegates opposed say no. I guess I'll do that one more time. All those delegates in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those delegates opposed say no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, two-thirds have voted in the affirmative. The motion is adopted, and the platform has been amended as shown on the screen.
I think everybody was scratching their head during that, watching the Democratic National Convention last night as they were attempting to reinsert language into the party platform, including God and Jerusalem. And the reinsertion, that little bit of parliamentary procedure itself, became something of a story. Was it a story to begin with that the Democratic National Committee platform did not have God, did not have Jerusalem, perhaps at one time, or I guess it at one time did, and then it was taken out? And is the press actually asking and getting answers to all the right questions? For instance, why were people booing after that little bit of a debacle of parliamentary procedure that we just heard? Welcome back to Issues Etc. live this Thursday afternoon, the 6th of September. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about media coverage of that story and several others with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway in the first half hour of Issues Etc. A little bit later, Maggie Carner joins us. We're going to be getting a response to something else you may have heard from the Democratic National Convention. That was a speech given by Sandra Fluke. She was made famous by Rush Limbaugh when he called her a nasty name when she was testifying in favor of the HHS mandate several months ago, where there she was on the dais, and she was delivering a short speech talking about two different Americas that face the American voter in the near future. We'll get Maggie's response in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back.
It is always nice to be here with you.
You initially didn't think that the removal of the God/Jerusalem language from the Democratic National Committee's platform was a big story. Why was that?
Yeah, I think I really did not call this one correctly. When I first saw the stories, what set me off was the way that they were being handled. I thought they were hyped up. So ABC News, for instance, when it first reported on the fact that the words God and Jerusalem were no longer in the platform, they said, "For Democrats, there is no God in 2012. And I thought that was saying a bit much. I mean, platforms are created by committee. The mention of God that was in there was pretty anodyne to begin with. It referred to God-given potential. It just seemed like they were overblowing the story, hyping it up. And I think it's pretty fair to say I got that wrong.
Okay, before we move on to last night's events, which in itself was another story, how did you think, other than the one you just mentioned, how did you think the coverage of the removal of the language was in terms of the media's kind of just journalistic pursuit?
Well, there were so many things about the media coverage that really point to the trouble that the media have in covering Democrats and religion in general. The media are really good at observing how religion affects Republican Party politics or Conservative Party politics, and they're just very bad at seeing how it affects Democratic Party politics. So, for instance, when National Journal reported on it, they said the absence of one word from the Democratic Party platform could raise some conservative hackles. And it is true. It did raise conservative hackles. I mean, it was like a perfect story for conservatives about all that they don't like about the Democratic Party, the removal of the one mention of God that they had in their platform. And even just a few years ago, there were something like 7 mentions of God in the platform. So it was a great story for conservatives. It was a great story for Republicans in that they could make the Democratic Party look bad. But what leads like that forget is that there are quite a few religious adherents in the Democratic Party, too, and they have been really fighting with their leadership to have a voice in the party, and that has kind of ebbed and flowed over the past, 8 years or so, and that is a big story that nobody ever seems to cover. In 2004, the exit polls showed that quite a few people voted for Bush over what they said were issues of values, and that really scared the Democratic Party. They realized they had lost in part by not showing enough concern about that motivation that a lot of voters have, values. And so in the years after 2004, they worked very hard to reach out to evangelicals, Catholics, other religious groups to show that the Democratic Party does care about that. And then in the last 4 years, that effort has just kind of completely gone away. But you don't, not completely, I mean, it's really petered out, and there's a lot of frustration for religious people on the left. But the media never covered that story. It's like they only think of conservative people as being religious, and they only think of religion as being a conservative thing. But a lot of people who are religious aren't conservative, and they do, they have different ideas about, they have different ideas in terms of where their religion leads them, and they're just ignored by the mainstream media, and it's very frustrating for them.
So you're saying that by and large, the media coverage doesn't recognize the religious left?
Yeah, they downplay it, or they ignore them completely. They don't understand their concerns. They don't understand the way they talk about things. And I mean, even if you watch the convention, you can see that there are a ton of religious speakers or people using religious language to convey their point. There are people on left and right who think that their religious views have a lot to say about their politics, and they will speak that way. And, this year it's actually been far more evident at the Democratic convention than it was at the Republican convention, with just a few exceptions. I mean, the Democratic convention has been full of religious language and religious speakers. It's kind of hard to understand because they're also talking a lot about their strong support for abortion, but mixed in with that is a lot of religious rhetoric. Sometimes at the same time, they're talking about their religion leading them to support abortion rights. And the media have these templates where if you're religious and you have a view on abortion, it's probably just that you're pro-life. And so they tend to not know how to write about it.
So last night, there was this beyond awkward parliamentary exchange where a return of the God in Jerusalem language was proposed by a local party president, I believe. And the chair took a thrice-made voice vote, we heard it, and then declared that it was two-thirds, the required two-thirds, and the party's platform was now amended yet again. What's the real story there, and what did you find missing in the coverage of how that went down?
Okay, well, I'm not in Charlotte, I have not talked to people who are booing, and I don't know because I wasn't down there, but that's actually my big complaint about the media coverage. It's pretty obvious to me, but this is an assumption on my part, that the booing was about the fact that parliamentary procedure was completely violated. I mean, the chair simply asserted something that nobody thinks is true. Everyone knows that that was a pretty evenly divided room when it came to whether the platform should be amended to include these mentions of God and Jerusalem. And considering that it needed very clear, two-thirds majority, nobody thinks that the guy running the convention was right. So when they were booing, I think the most obvious reason for the booing would be that they were really upset at that violation of parliamentary procedure. And yes, they were probably mostly upset about that violation of parliamentary procedure because they didn't want either God or Jerusalem mentioned in the platform. But without talking to these people, we don't actually know. And so, the media do such a good job of doing this horse race political coverage. So the first thing they did is they ran to Obama's surrogate, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who like the previous day had been saying, no, it's intentional. It's no big deal about the platform. You're all making a big story out of nothing. And then the next day she's like, no, nobody was booing. Nobody was upset. And that's, they talked about the fact that she was obviously lying. And that's all very interesting. But to me, what's more interesting than that is, why were these people booing? Why did they not want these mentions in the platform? What is the background on that? What is the issue with Jerusalem, if it's Jerusalem? What is the issue with God, if it's God? And that would make such an interesting story and would probably expose so much about the really interesting conflict in the Democratic Party on these topics. But it's so much easier to just talk to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and she makes for fantastic train wreck television. And so people just choose that because it's the easier access rather than talking to real people who have real ideas and who are in conflict on these topics, whichever one it is. I assume, although I could be wrong, I assume that it was the Jerusalem issue that really bothered people, because that's a very hot-button topic, whether you recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel or not, because some Arab activists don't want to recognize that, and Jewish activists feel that it's very important. And so this is a very hot-button topic, although I also saw some people quoted who were talking about how they thought that the Democratic Party needed to embrace like a secularist stance, and by having even the mention of God, you know, this like completely vague, nondescript, civil religion style God in the platform was a bridge too far for them. So we don't know what was motivating these people, but I bet it's a very interesting story.
So you're saying with about 30 seconds here that before we take our break, all that really needs to be done journalistically is for someone to go down to the floor, go person to person saying, did you boo? Did you boo? Did you boo? And when they find one, say why, and then keep going until you've accumulated enough opinions down there.
Well, that, and also there are people who are active in the party who could provide some context. There are a ton of religious activists who care about these issues on one side or the other. And they, you know, even just people who are leaders in these movements would be able to provide some context. But yes, just basic shoe leather journalism of asking people what's going on would have been very helpful.
All right. When we come back, we're going to spend some more time with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. We got some other stories to talk about. And one of them is a prayer event, a Muslim prayer event, that was scheduled to take place during the Democratic National Convention, its coverage, and that story we've talked about before, a Pakistani girl that was charged with blasphemy. It really is another interesting story. How well is it being covered? We'll answer all those questions with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of GetReligion.org right after this.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How would you like to win a 4-CD set of 45 Reformation hymns? It's titled Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church. Now here is how you enter this contest. First, like the Facebook fan page for Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World. Facebook.com/Lutheran Public Radio. Second, post an invitation for your Facebook friends to listen to Lutheran Public Radio. And third, send the text of your Facebook post and the number of your Facebook friends to contest@issuesetc.org. We'll give away this 4-CD set, Heirs of the Reformation, to the contestant with the best Facebook post and to the contestant with the most number of Facebook friends. We'll announce the winner on Monday, October the 1st. Participate in a Facebook contest for Lutheran Public Radio during the month of September.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of several stories involving religion and the Democratic National Convention. It's Thursday afternoon, September the 6th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. And our Twitter address, @issuesetc. So far on the God Jerusalem thing, real quick, what kind of a grade would you give the general coverage? I mean, you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. You mentioned some of it in some of your stories. What kind of grade would you give the media coverage of that particular episode in the Democratic National Convention?
I would, even though conceding that I was wrong to say this wasn't a story at first, and it really was, I would say it's been very poor, like a D, because there's so much more that needs to be reported that's not being reported about civil religion in American politics, about the role that religion plays in the Democratic Party, about the way religious adherents feel they are treated by the Democratic Party or what they think they could offer the Democratic Party that the Democratic Party doesn't take advantage of. I mean, there's so many rich and beautiful and interesting stories there that just haven't been covered. And then as far as the way it has been covered, it's just been very surfacey. I mean, it sounds like we have a lot of background we need on the conflict with Jerusalem or just the simple mention of God. And so while it's made for some very exciting coverage and it certainly has been, fun TV and radio and print stories, we just need to see a lot more. And I think the fact that this story just kind of came up and bit reporters suddenly shows why you need to stay on those stories over the long term and not just every few years when something like this strikes. The lack of awareness about the role religion plays really came through in this story, in the shallowness of how it's been covered.
There's another religion-related topic to the DNC, and that has to do with the Muslim Juma, whatever that is, a prayer event that was scheduled to take place during the Democratic National Convention. What did you find there in the media coverage?
Yeah, it's really – if the media has trouble covering stories related to Islam, they particularly have – trouble covering stories related to Islam when there is some kind of dispute within the religion. So there tend to be some biases in how the media covers Muslims. There's a desire to protect Muslims against bias, and so that kind of comes through in a lot of the coverage. And what that leads to is painting all Muslims with the same broad brush, even though there are many different schools of thought within Islam, and there are people who are quite political in Islam, there are people who oppose political Islam, and these people are present in the United States. And so this Juma story, I think, highlighted the trouble that reporters have when covering disputes within Islam. This Juma was supposed to have 20,000 Muslims coming together to pray just prior to the Democratic Convention. They did make it on the official calendar, not just the one that's sponsored by the host committee, but also the one that's run by the DNC itself. And it was a whole weekend of activities and speakers of issues of concern to this particular group of Muslims. There's this other Muslim activist who kind of sounded the alarm on this group. He said that, one of the guys organizing it was someone who had testified on behalf of a convicted terrorist. He said he had personally heard sermons that another guy had given that he found to be beyond the pale. And so there was this dispute. And the story just was not explained very well in the local media. First, they just kind of ran with the 20,000 figure without really checking whether that was a legitimate expectation of a number of Muslims that would come. It turned out it was basically a few hundred that ended up coming. Then when that happened, the guys organizing the event blamed the FBI for coming in and questioning them, but wasn't really explained why the FBI was questioning, and it just didn't really add up or make sense why the FBI was there. When the DNC removed them from the calendar, they said that the reason why they did it was because the topics weren't appropriate, but the examples given were completely within the normal realm of conversation that you might see at a Democratic gathering, like questions about illegal surveillance or questions about the Patriot Act. I mean, these things would be fine at a Republican gathering too. And so, but the media just didn't seem that interested in it. And so it was just kind of a weird, poorly covered story. Another thing that they did was they kept referring to the guy who questioned the original group as controversial, but they didn't refer to the group itself as controversial. Controversial is not really a helpful word to use to describe players in a big story. It doesn't really mean that much. But if you are going to use the word, it's weird to use it for someone who sits on the U.S. Religious Freedom Commission and not on not use it for someone who's testified on behalf of a terrorist. And it gives this impression about Muslims that when you paint the one guy, like the guy who's questioning the terrorist ties of the organization, when you paint him as a controversial Muslim, but not the people who testified on behalf of the terrorists themselves as controversial, it's just a weird way of presenting the story to an audience.
You also say that this story highlights both the necessity of and the limits of fact-checking. What do you mean?
Yeah, well, fact-checking has really had better months than we've seen in the last month. I think most people are learning that fact checks are just opinion-based columns where usually the columnist has a disagreement as to a particular political approach that someone else is taking. But what I thought was funny about this one is there was a fact check on this story because a lot of Christian conservatives were for some reason really worried or upset about this juma being held right by in advance of the DNC. Anyway, the fact check says it was not on the website of the Democratic National Convention. And to substantiate the claim, they said that they had accessed the site on August 31st. But if they'd been following the story at all, like all sorts of bloggers had noted that the item was removed from the DNC calendar the previous day. So they come down with this like word from on high, oh, we are the fact checkers and we can tell you. But if you've heard from any conservative that this was on the DNC calendar, they're wrong because we checked the website and it was not on there. But it's not a fact. And they didn't do a good job checking because it was on there. It just was removed when it became controversial. And so this voice of God, you know, from on high that we're going to tell you that what you've heard is wrong, when in fact it wasn't wrong, just to me shows why fact checks have become such a complete and utter joke. Anyway.
Another story with a few minutes left to us here, Molly, has to do with, and this is a story that's now well circulated, 11-year-old Christian girl in Pakistan who was brought up on blasphemy charges. The story has unfolded to basically reveal some kind of a conspiracy on the part of local religious leaders. Has the coverage of this story, and you write about the Associated Press, has the coverage of this story improved with time? You said it started out pretty weak. Has it gotten any better?
Well, the one thing that's very interesting about this story is that it was covered incredibly well by the global press when it first broke. And you saw tons of British reports, you know, Indian, Pakistani reports, all sorts of English language reports from all over the world were really interested in this story about an 11-year-old Christian girl being charged with blasphemy. But it was the American press that was kind of slow to it. But the Associated Press, which is an American, which has a strong presence in America, had an update to the story recently, and that shows that I think the story is gaining interest in America. It ran in a lot of papers in here in the United States, and it was about how an interesting update to the story, which is that a Muslim cleric actually ended up being charged with falsely accusing this girl of doing something. And that is a major story in Pakistan. I mean, the blasphemy laws there are pretty strict to begin with, and their application has been of particular concern. They're used frequently to oppress religious minorities, and if you speak out against them, you get killed. I mean, there have been high-ranking members of government who have spoken out against the blasphemy laws, and they have faced the ultimate punishment. And there's widespread popular support for the blasphemy laws. So the fact that this happened is a major development, and it's not going over well in the region. A lot of people think that the Muslim cleric was set up and that it's just being done to throw water on these blasphemy laws. But the story itself was actually handled very well. It explained all the different attitudes. It even quoted people who support the blasphemy laws. One of the things that a lot of times a Western press will do is they think these blasphemy laws, which even if the blasphemy laws themselves don't end in capital punishment, if someone's ever released from prison after being charged with blasphemy, they're frequently killed by mobs. I mean, they're very brutal, brutal laws, officially and unofficially. And so a lot of the Western media just thinks, well, any right-thinking person would oppose these. And so they frequently quote just people who oppose them, including Muslims who oppose these laws. But obviously they have widespread support in the country, and it's important to hear from those people as well about why they support these laws and what they are hoping to protect with these laws. And the Associated Press actually started to do that. They got a quote or two in there from people who support these laws. And I think that's an important thing to do if people are going to develop on these laws or if there's going to be any true discussion between opposing camps, understanding each other's position is a very important part of it. And journalism can provide a useful service by helping people understand each other's positions. And so it's as this story develops, I hope we see more of that.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back in the last half hour of Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, Maggie Carner is going to join us. She's Director of Life and Health Ministries for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Last night at the Democratic National Convention, one of the speakers, very briefly, was Sandra Fluke. Now, she would probably not be known to anyone, nor would she be invited to speak at the Democratic National Convention were it not for the notoriety that she gained after being insulted publicly by Rush Limbaugh in connection to her support for the HHS mandate. Well, she was there, she was speaking, and she was making the case. She was talking about two different Americas. We're going to have Maggie Carner respond to some of what she had to say, not only about the past controversy of the HHS mandate, well, I guess it's really ongoing even today, but also about some of the things she predicted for the future, depending on who the American people elect. That's coming up right after this break on Issues Etc.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
At steadfastlutherans.org, we've been called contentious. We've even been called the brothers of John the curmudgeon, and we may well be curmudgeonly sometimes. But we always have the best and clearest voices in confessional Lutheranism. Articles from Molly Hemingway, Martin Nolan, Clement Preuss, Todd Wilkin, and a host of regular contributors. Come check out the new Lutheran media. Always clear, always concise, always confessionally Lutheran. steadfastlutherans.org.
Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, is a quarterly publication for the Confessional Lutheran, and they have a special 20th anniversary CD. This CD contains every issue of Logia for the last 20 years. It's a PDF file with search capabilities and bookmarks. This special anniversary CD is an excellent addition to your theological library. You can pre-order it for just $40. That's 50 cents per issue. Find out more at logia.org, logia.org.
No gimmicks, no shticks, just straightforward preaching and teaching in accord with Scripture and the Lutheran confessions. By the book liturgy, right from the hymnal. No glitz, just Christ crucified for sinners like us. We're Grace Lutheran Church in Racine, Wisconsin. Come receive God's gifts with us. Find out more about us at gracelutheranracine, that's all one word, .net. And like you, we're proud supporters of Issues Etc.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Judges address conscience violations.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Two lawsuits against the HHS mandate, which will require insurance plans to cover abortion and contraceptives, have been dismissed on technicalities. The judges reasoned that neither plaintiff, Belmont Abbey College, and a group of seven states had standing to sue. In other words, since the mandate hadn't yet taken effect, their freedoms could not have been violated before bringing suit. Nebraska Attorney General John Bruning, who led the lawsuit on behalf of the states, pointed out, "Essentially, this decision asks millions of Americans to watch and wait for their religious liberties to be violated."
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference.